And here we are live for the Refinery Episode 9, August 12th, 2014. I am Leslie. We've got Ryan, JD, Felicia, and Corey. And Andy, are you there, Andy?
Andy, I'll be here in a minute.
Ooh,
Andy is
awesome.
not there yet. He is tardy. I assume he's going to be bringing a note from his mother. Otherwise.
Cleaning the kitchen, so.
Oh, well, then that's fine.
Brownie points right now.
As long as he's doing chores, then that's a perfectly excused absence. All right. Well, JD mentioned that he had a few things on his mind that he wanted to talk about. So,
Oh man, here we go. We're starting it off. We're
pressure,
kicking it
man.
off real early. Yeah, no. There was a lot of stuff that's been happening in the news. And of those things, I think the thing that you really can't change the channel without noticing or without seeing is that Robin Williams passed away. And everybody has had opinions on his passing, and some of our folks on the conservative side of things may have taken a bad moment, sort of jumped into things with not the best kind of preparation, or thought even really, when they made these comments. But it's been a wild day on Twitter, as Fishy got to see and participated in a little bit this morning. The big one, or there are actually a couple. Rush Limbaugh had some statements that he made about depression and liberals and how the two things are related, which I'm sure, that's going to go over just perfectly with mainstream America. Everybody's going to just be real happy that he made that little connection. And then the other one was Matt Walsh, who wrote a very well-meaning, I'm sure, blog post, maybe a day or two too soon. I don't know. I don't really want to be the judge of that, but there was a lot of infighting in the conservative sphere about that post and some of the ramifications of what Matt said there. But it's just done a lot to cause dissension and really, a lot of circular firing squad action. People, who are friends and allies on a lot of issues, just sort of turning against each other because of Robin Williams' suicide and how they view suicide and depression. And it's just, it hasn't been a pretty day on social media.
Well, I'm pretty pleased that I've ignored Twitter all day. I tend to do that when famous people die. I will absolutely ignore Twitter because you don't get a whole lot of intellectual depth in 140 characters. It's mostly people emoting and expressing, and that's just not all that interesting to me. But I did see the Matt Walsh article, and I've seen a little bit of the blowback about about what Rush said. My impression on the Walsh article, nothing that he said was anything really very controversial at all. In fact, it was quite, after reading the article, it was quite uplifting and compassionate about the about depression as a whole and how to handle it and all that kind of stuff. The problem is that he used the incendiary headline trend that people are doing. And so what you get is from that headline that was rather incendiary, you start out from a standpoint of this guy is being a jerk. And then you read the article to find out, oh, okay, he's not. And in some instances, on some of the articles that Matt has written, that type of headline that sort of is, I don't know, anti what the actual article is. That sort of headline has been effective in getting him a lot of readership and drawing interest in conversation. But in this case, it just was. I don't think that many people are going to ignore the headline or ignore their initial bad reaction and read through and read what he's really trying to say about what suicide is. And frankly, the immediate rush to write an article about something that just happened is really distasteful in general. I understand people wanting to capitalize on the news and get hits to their blog and all of that kind of stuff, but there are so many articles about Robin Williams and his death and what it means to me, and then there are those who are trying to capitalize on it politically, and it becomes just so very tacky.
Yeah, and before we go on, I just want to mention, because Leslie said that the title is incendiary, so we should probably tell what the title is. It's Robin Williams Didn't Die from a Disease, He Died from His Choice. That was the title of the article, and one that I think is really, you know, as you said, it's clickbait. Clearly,
right.
it's meant to get people to click on the title and see the article. But I also think it kind of ignores a lot of people shared this sentiment on Twitter, and I think it was the main real cause of the debate was that there were people who suffer from depression. They were talking about how it's hard to say that this is a real choice for Robin Williams, because I mean, and to me, even I don't understand the concept of saying that somebody who took their own life is a rational person. I think that it's the definition of irrational to take one's own life. So it's very, very hard for me to understand, and it's been hard for other people to understand, you know, how you could make that sort of.
But Matt's point in that was to try to make people who suffer from depression not feel helpless. I understood his point in trying to make that distinction, that it is always your choice and you always have the choice and there's always the way out and you are not a helpless victim of a disease. I understood what he was trying to do, and I really don't, you know, care to discuss the concept of depression and what it means and suicide and all that kind of stuff. That's just not really what we're here for. But the point he was trying to make was not to, was not to denigrate the people who suffer from depression, but to try to give them hope and some sort of hope and a feeling of control over their own lives. That was what he was trying to do. I don't think that the world was ready to hear that message right now.
Trying to do something and actually accomplishing it are very different things, and I think sorry?
Well, I wanted to offer a different perspective. I was just kind of thinking, but I'll wait until you guys are done.
No, welcome back, Andy. Come on. We've been waiting for weeks.
Welcome back.
Come on.
Come on. I had to pay $100 just to come on tonight. You always make me do this. You know, what really hurt is I found out you don't make anyone else pay. And that's what really...
Who told them?
I'm not going to talk about that. It was Ryan. But I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay? Ryan.
Look, let me give a different perspective as, once again, sorry, the former liberal. There are isolated comments like the ones you're talking about, but let me tell you something. This entire experience of what's happened with Robin Williams, who outlines, or for me, has just really shown another reason why I loved becoming a conservative. I am so proud to have joined the ranks of you guys, okay? And here's why. What I have seen generally, overwhelmingly, from conservatives who are commenting on the death of Robin Williams, and, you know, there's the discussion on suicide and so forth, but just let's just talk about the death of Robin Williams. Robin Williams was an enemy of the right, okay? We know this. Robin Williams... There are a few people on this planet who hate everybody in this discussion group tonight more than Robin Williams did, okay? I mean, deeply, deeply hated us. And yet, we on the right celebrate his greatness. We celebrate his gifts. We celebrate his art, his craft, his brilliance. I believe he is all around, if you look at all around both physical humor and writing of humor and so forth, I think he's the most gifted overall comedian, humorist of our lifetimes. Okay, overall. Just, I mean, his talent was, Robin Williams didn't have talent, he was talent. He woke up in the morning and went to bed at night being more talented than anybody he would ever meet. Okay, and that's just the way it was. Let me tell you something about the left. When a right-winger, strong right-winger...
It wasn't just humor. It wasn't just humor. He did great dramatic acting, too.
Oh, yeah. You see, but that's because his ability to conceive, he could put himself into a role as quickly as he could put himself into a joke because his mind could instantly imagine a different perspective that others couldn't and then bring it to us, both physically through or through humor, through the written word, or through a dramatic piece. He was incredible. Let me tell you something about liberals, folks. If a conservative has massive talent, and this is a conservative who has been an outspoken critic of the left, and that conservative dies, you will not see, you will, at the very most, you will see grudging approval through gritted teeth only because they know that it would look really bad to say what they really felt. And a lot of times they'll just say what they really feel. You will not see this. We on the right can appreciate, I guess here's what I'm getting at. We on the right, you guys on the right, can appreciate the greatness of people who disagree with you deeply. And on the left, they can't. Because when your entire goal in life is to control other people, then they become pawns in your chessboard of life. You cannot love and appreciate those you wish to control. And you sure as heck can't enjoy a pawn that moves its own way and not the way you wish it to move. And that's more important to you than their gifts and their talents. I'm telling you this, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart as a former leftist. The left would not celebrate the passing of a right winger to anywhere, not even to 1% of the degree that I have seen from the right celebrating this great man, this great talent.
I think that's a good point to make, but I don't know how it advances what we're really doing here with, you know, moving the conservative message forward. And I'm not going to get into any of the details of his life or his death. I don't care about all that. I really don't. What I'm really focused on is how we are going to reach hearts and minds, how we're going to deal with the images that people on our side are putting out. And that, I think, is the focus that I have on where this has been.
And you're totally right. This, what I'm saying, doesn't advance that. I just wanted to say that as a comment to you guys, the right, and basically tell you how much you guys impress me. And I'm not, I mean that. The right impresses me, from the rhinos to the Tea Party to the Christian right to all of them. All of them love people. And they don't only love people insofar as those people agree with them. All I want, you're right, this doesn't deal with the fact that we've got some loose cannons making us look bad. That's a different story. But I just wanted you guys to know the right is amazing. It's not perfect because there's too many of us to be perfect, but it's amazing.
But actually, that's kind of an insight that we need to understand, because we can only be more effective at bringing in the people in the middle if we understand who those people in the middle are, if we have to understand the people who aren't us. And it's natural to me to be able to look at an artist and appreciate his art, even if I don't appreciate his politics or his lifestyle or his hair color. It's not. Maybe it is compartmentalizing. Maybe it is appreciating one thing and ignoring the other. I don't really care what we term it. But it's natural to me to have an appreciation for, you know, a Susan Sarandon film and her acting ability, and know that she and I differ greatly on our politics. But she's doing a job which is to entertain or enlighten me, and she is able to accomplish that, and you know, ta-da, I will pay the money for her to, you know, for the movie. It's just natural to me to be able to do that and to be able to like someone and agree with someone on a particular thing and work with them on a particular task, even while I totally disagree with them on something else. But you're saying, Andy, that true liberals don't do that? If they dislike my politics, they're not going to be able to work with me or appreciate me for anything?
That article that I wanted to read a few weeks ago, 10 Reasons I'm No Longer a Liberal, one of his points at the end that I have highlighted, it says, the left's selective outrage convinced me that much canonical left-wing feminism is not so much support for women as it is a protest against Western heterosexual men. It's an I-hate phenomenon rather than an I-love phenomenon. And he points out that liberals, we have a different worldview in a lot of cases, and liberals are often, I hate, I want to destroy, this is bad, this is, you know, people aren't good, people need to be controlled, and the conservative worldview, kind of like Leslie said, is we can appreciate good no matter where it comes from. Everyone has good inside of them. I might disagree with you on a lot of things, but you're good or you're right in this place, and I want to build people up, I want to give people freedom, because if I do, they'll do amazing things. And one's coming from the positive, one's coming from the negative. I think that's what Andy was mentioning. I think Leslie's kind of showing an example of the conservative view that even if I disagree with you, I can enjoy certain parts. I think that's a big difference in the way that the two sides think.
Yeah, and of course, Leslie, I'm not absolutizing it to saying no liberal can ever show appreciation toward a conservative. But
right. Trends and in general help us to understand.
Oh, but they're overwhelming trends. Okay, I mean, look at the whole foundation of the sales pitch. What is the basic sales pitch of the left to voters? It is set up somebody for you to hate, you know, rich people, white people, the military, oil companies, pharmaceutical companies, whatever, right? Set up somebody for you to hate and then say, give us 51% of the vote and we will bring them down for your benefit. Okay, what is the sales pitch of the right, the basic sales pitch of the right? Unleash your potential, not through paying it from out of somebody else's earned pocket, but unleash your potential, believe in you. I mean, look, Ryan's right. They are united around hate. And let me tell you something, they hate constantly. And this is not just the angry college student, it's the sweet little old lady. They hate, you know, like I mentioned in that one little thing I did. You see it the second you disagree with them. They have to silence it. They can't tolerate disagreement. It becomes, let's just not talk about that. Oh, let's just change the subject. They want to run. They either run or they attack. There's no in between. There is so little in between with committed liberals. Okay? And it is really something. It's ugly. And I ran from it into the arms of the right. And I would never look back. You know, like I said, hey, look, I go to political functions. I see nasty people on the right grouping around. And by the way, I can understand the loneliness that Robin Williams must have felt. Because every time I see somebody who's really high up on the right, I see all these people glomming onto them just for what they can get from them at these dinner parties. You know, and I think what it must be like for that person to know nobody in this room cares about me except for what I can do for them. Incredible loneliness. And Robin Williams, yeah, I mean, he must have dealt with it all the time. Anyway, sorry to go on to that. But look, the right, we value the potential and the gifts and the success of people regardless of if they agree with us. I am very impressed with Ellen DeGeneres' abilities. She was an average stand-up comic who's become an incredible talk show host.
Okay. I adore her. Yeah, she's like the nation's big sister.
Right. Okay. She found her niche because she wasn't that great on stage. She was okay. But, I mean, look, we can do that. You know why? Because we don't measure our happiness against the success of others. The left does. And it makes it much – and so while I wouldn't absolutize, I would very easily generalize and say, yeah, they are not nearly as good at sales. And you're seeing it right now. Yeah, you guys pull out a couple examples, and they're good examples. I saw hundreds well, not hundreds, I didn't read that many, but just dozens of examples of conservatives doing nothing but honoring the greatness of Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm. I think Andy, he kind of mentioned it's not all liberals that if a conservative died wouldn't say something good about that person, but it kind of is the culture, and I think we're seeing a little bit of that with Hillary Clinton. She said something bad about Obama's foreign policy. You know, this was wrong, probably shouldn't have done this, would have done it this way. And she got in a little bit of trouble for it. 2 or 3 days later, she's coming out, she's apologizing, she stepped out of line and said something she wasn't supposed to say. She didn't support her guy no matter what. And so I think if someone does, if a conservative guy were to die or woman were to die, a lot of people would come out and be vile. Some people might come out and be good about it, kind of like we're being with Robin Williams. Hey, this was a great person. We disagreed, but okay. But they're going to get attacked from the hardcore people on their side for doing that. Even if it's the right thing to do, they're still going to get attacked and silenced.
That one silent pretty fast there.
I was just waiting for what you guys would think of it. I agree.
I think that as bad, I mean, to me, the commentary, especially from Rush, because he's such a huge voice in this, in just the national discussion, and he is so closely associated with the conservative movement. The thing that, and I don't want to come off concern trolley here, but it drives me nuts that we get marginalized as a group for comments that, as you said, Andy, are one in millions of comments. It's coming from Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh has never spoken for me. I mean, I don't trust him enough to speak for me. It's just been, he's never been a voice that I've particularly been a fan of. I wasn't there during the 90s. I was two, but it's annoying to me that MSNBC and CNN and Huffington Post and everybody else, you name the news company and it's going to be there, is going to bring out these comments that Rush Limbaugh made, and right. I'm the bad guy because of it. And what are we supposed to do about that? How do we do anything about that? Is there a solution to this aside from trying to be nice people in everyday life? I mean, how do we account for this?
I think we have to realize that, the left is not collectivized as much as we are. One person on the left can say something stupid, and that's just that one person on the left saying something stupid. Not every single leftist has to own and be responsible for that stupid thing. But we on the right, if one person on the right says something stupid, what, one guy who attended one Senate candidate's rally said something stupid, and then that Senate candidate, because he didn't denounce the member in his audience, now no longer has a Senate career? I mean, didn't that happen before? And, we have one Republican candidate for Senate says something stupid, and that means all Republicans everywhere have to answer and give their opinion of it and denounce that person completely. So we end up owning everybody else's responses and everybody else's statement. So when Rush Limbaugh says something that is going to be taken in such a way, then, yeah, it damages the whole movement. And we know that. It isn't fair, but so what? It isn't right, but so what? It isn't what Rush meant, but so what? The vast majority of people are not going to listen to what Rush actually said. They're not going to read a transcript. They're only going to read the Huffington Post headline and maybe the Huffington Post article. And they're going to get an impression that Rush Limbaugh says that Robin Williams killed himself because he's a leftist, because leftist ideology makes you commit suicide. That's what they're going to think. And they're then going to think, because they're not political people, they read Huffington Post for the pictures of boobies or whatever you get on Huffington Post, they're going to look at that and say, oh, Republicans believe that being a leftist makes you kill yourself. Republicans are stupid. That's what they're going to take out of it. And we have to accept that. And Rush has to know that because he's not a stupid individual.
Well, can I, you know, can I ask you two questions?
Please do.
First of all, do you think that that's because that we are put in that position pretty much strictly because of their dominance in the big three, the media, academia, and entertainment industry?
Absolutely.
Okay. And secondly, does that put us right back into Fishy's basically stated purpose at the beginning? Because of that dominance, we have to come up with a quick and much more effective counterpunch to deal with the random moronic statements that come out from our side. And I, by the way, JD, I agree, those are dumb. Okay, I'm with you. Because even when I agree with like parts of that article, strategically they're dumb. And we have to deal with that.
Right.
Part of that, I think we deal with that, is because we on the right are so overwhelmingly more positive about the passing of somebody like Robin Williams than they would be about Rush Limbaugh, you know. But that's not enough because of their dominance of the big three. So what do we do? What do you guys think? I mean, I'm just throwing it out. What do we do to counter that? Because we can't ask every Rush Limbaugh who speaks for 3 hours to never, I know I couldn't speak for 3 hours, 15 hours a week and never have a loose comment.
Well, I speak 2 hours a week and have loose comments. I mean, come on, sure.
You know what I mean?
You could make them as popular as the liberal talk show hosts. Instead of having 20 million listeners a day, if he had 5 or 10 listeners, no one would care. No one would know what he says.
We can't do that. He's too good at what he does.
Well, I mean, there are definitely other shows out there. I know Dana Lash is on around the same time. I'm not sure if she's a direct competitor or not. But
No. Corey won't let me listen to women that cute.
And, you know, and Ann Coulter says stuff that I'm embarrassed of, and Dana Lash says stuff that I'm embarrassed of, and Michelle Malkin says stuff I'm embarrassed of, Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, they all have, at one time or another, said stuff that I wholeheartedly agree with and stuff that I wholeheartedly disagree with. You know, that's just the nature of other people talking. I'm not going to agree with them 100%. And I can't change what they do, and I don't want to. And I think they have an outsized importance to us even, because they are, in fact, our only successes in the conservative movement. You know, we don't have ridiculously successful conservative philosophers. We don't have ridiculously successful conservative entertainers, educators, or politicians. Our only real big successes in the conservative movement are Fox News and AM radio. That's, without a doubt, the areas that conservatives own. We have a few successful conservative actors and educators and politicians, but we don't have that industry. So we take a lot of pride and put a lot of importance in the stars of AM radio and Fox News, and we end up kind of almost accepting that they speak for us and that they are our heroes. They aren't, but we kind of put them on that pedestal too, because the arena of successful, you know, wildly successful national platform conservatives, it's a small group. You know, there's not that many to choose from, so each one has to have an outsized importance. So when Rush says something stupid, or that can be taken stupidly, or that will be taken and used against us, which I think is really more of it, that they're, you know, there are the people who are paid to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day and extract that sentence that can be twisted and written into a HuffPo article and spread on Journal List and become the meme of the day. They do this on purpose. They look for this every day, and the fact that they only get one thing every other week is pretty incredible. But I understand why it's such a big deal for us, but we have to find a way to kind of bust down their importance in our own lives, I think, and maybe question, how do we question the premise of the Huffington Post and all of those guys, and question their premise of Rush speaking for me? How do we kind of disown that without really disowning him?
It's tough. It's a really tough call. You know, and a lot of people, you know, I don't even know anymore if this is the case, but I certainly know some people who got into the conservative movement through talk radio hosts. I'm sure that Rush and Levin, you know, et al., the rest of them, did their fair share of bringing people into the movement to some extent. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the average Mark Levin or the average Rush Limbaugh listener does politically. I don't know what they do. I'm sure they contribute financially to campaigns that they get told to contribute to, but I don't know what they do as far as activism goes. I don't know that there's a way that we can detach the importance of these radio show hosts. And I really don't, you know, I don't even want to. I just wish that they would try a little bit harder to not give gifts to the left.
Well, and do the stars in the firmament on the leftosphere, do they do the same thing our guys do and we just don't know it?
Oh, we do know it. We pay attention to it. But as we discussed last week, we're really, really bad at making the left pay for their mistakes. I mean, We make something funny for 2 seconds, fishy.
We're down one strike because they own mass media. We're down two strikes because our spokespeople, you know, for lack of a better term in this one, are seen as spokespeople for us. We can't afford a third strike. So this is just the reality that there is. We have that environment, that ground on which to fight. That is the way it's done. And if you analyze the way the left works, and they do have people listening, watching, paying, you know, paid to listen to these programs and extract the gems out of them that will do the most damage, we're not doing that. Our priority on the right is not fighting and defeating liberalism. It has been, you know, trying not to get shot in the foot. And that's important. I mean, the first thing you have to do to win is not to try to lose. That's where I think we are. Going on the offensive does have the benefit of helping conservatives get back on message so that we're not always responding and reacting to what's going on, but leading the conversation. But we don't have people equipped to do that. What we end up with is, you know, God help, sites like Twitchy, which are picking off people that are on our own side sometimes. Maybe they're doing that in an attempt to be fair. I don't know. But it seems to me if you're going to organize an effort, if you're going to organize an effort, and look how seamlessly I went right back to my statement, that's totally going to get clipped out.
You are every bit as tough as Barack Obama in killing a fly during an interview.
Totes. But every bit of the conservative movement really needs to focus on, what do we do to defeat liberals in whatever way possible? And you know, again, step one is stop putting knives in allies' backs. But step two is, I think, being very thoughtful and careful about what we do say so that we're minimizing the opportunities, obviously, for the left to exploit us. And then third is absolutely going on the offensive, and why we don't have, with the entirety of conservative think tanks and organizations and people that fund campaigns and whatever, why they're not concerned with actually defeating leftists, on a long-term basis, I don't know. Part of it, again, is that first strike is we don't hold the mass media. We have to go around them. That's more easily done if you have video. It's more easily done if you have a platform that reaches more than just the bubble. Rush has probably got the max bubble that there is for us, but it's still a bubble. It's still only the people that usually agree with them. So it goes back to me to what, Kirk Schlichter has said in Conservative Insurgency is actually attempting to hijack these media, to insert ourselves in journalism, to become respected and independent so that there's not a way to marginalize us so easily.
I daydream about what it would be like if the popular big name conservatives would go on these liberal shows and do something totally different, not just sell conservatism. I got to be honest, people ask me, because we all get asked this, hey, geez, who would you like to meet? Who would you like to really sit down and have dinner with and talk to and so forth? I got to be honest, the people who fascinate me most are like Whoopi Goldberg, who fascinates me with her talent and her perspective on life. She's a raging wacko liberal. I understand that, okay? Like, I'm a raging wacko conservative. I would love to sit down and have dinner with her and talk and just see, where are you coming from? Why do you hold these views? You know what? She holds these views because she really believes that this or that group has been held down and she wants to liberate and she wants good things for them. She wants them unleashed. Well, that's what I want too. You see, I disagree with how she's going to get there, but I agree with a lot of the things she wants in life. And I wish that there were so many of our people. I wish there were more of our, people like Sean Hannity and so forth who would go on these shows and not just get on there to bicker, but to get on there and, I don't mean to kiss up, and not to be naive, because these people are going to try to trap you and because they hate you. I get it. And they're strategists. But what's wrong with telling them how great they are? Because they are. They are massively impressive. A lot of them are. Robin Williams had more go through his head in brilliance, literally, in one day of his life than I will my whole life. Okay? When somebody is, he was the Stephen Hawking of what he does. Okay? And why can't we, I am a total rhino and a traitor, yeah. But why can't we tell, why can't we marvel at the greatness of what they do and say, see, that's what I love about America. What you do in a free market gets totally expressed, totally unleashed, Alan, because what you do is so magnificent. It sells. I'd hate to see all your talent bottled up somewhere in a government-run country. I'd hate to see that. See, why aren't we doing that? Why aren't our leaders out there doing that on show after show after show after show? I believe that that would undermine a lot of what they're doing.
Well, it would also have the added benefit of showing conservatives being excited about something that excites the general public and say, yeah, you are really talented and I really appreciate the way that you did this, that, or the other thing. And isn't that incredible? Where I think we differ is blah, 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 that sort of thing. Giving people the opportunity to see conservatives as human. And that goes to a John Pierre Maley's article that he just wrote about hatred of people because of what they believe or how they align themselves politically. It was a really good article. We're going to put it in the chat links, the link in the chat there and in the video description. But he goes into how this sort of, it's depersonalizing people. Andrew W.K. had gotten a letter written to him for a column that he writes about a guy with his father having such difficult relationships because his father was a monster, right-wing extremist guy. And Andrew W.K. lit into him about you're focusing on all the wrong things, and you're getting to the point where you're dehumanizing people, and you need to remember that everyone is an individual, everyone is human. They're not, you know, nobody's monstrous like you're talking about just for their beliefs. Not the way that this kid meant it. And it was a really great example of how this sort of platform, these platforms, social media, the internet, does tend to let us depersonalize people. And that is a complete leftist tactic. I see some of it on the right too. But it's incredibly in use on the left. Just as you were saying, the whole thing about being taught to hate people, that is part of the means by which you can get that 51% to vote for liberal policies so that you can get one over on the people that have bothered them. I thought that was a great tie-in with that article.
Well, I got to be honest. One of the things that won me to the right was, you know, having been around constantly, how can we get 51% and get even with those we hate? I mean, that's the underlying theme constantly, and you're living in it. And when somebody comes to you and says, I love what you are. What do you mean you love what I am? I'm a gay black female or whatever. You're a white Christian, you know, whatever. No, you don't understand. I love what you are. I love your talent. I love your work ethic. I love your sense of humor, you know. And you and I want a lot of the same things. We both want the poor to have food to eat. We both want them to have jobs. We both want, people of various lifestyles to be able to choose how to live their lives, not have somebody control them. Here's the difference. You want it so much, and so do I. But you want it so much that you're willing to use government to force it to happen. And I believe that if the moment we use government to force it to happen, we take away the right of people to choose to make it happen. And if they can't choose to make it happen, they can't become good people. If I take a higher percentage of your wealth and give it to other people for my political gain, you can only become embittered by it. You can't become better by it. Okay? But I want you to know, I understand why you want to do that, because I want them to get the money and get the food and be unleashed and have the opportunities in good schools as much as you do. Why can't we be bonding with them that way instead of shouting at them?
I don't know, but I want to point something out that's going on in the chat right now. RIP Mr. Keating says that, sorry, they'll just move on the next attack on our side. They just roll differently than we do. The left will just quickly thank you for your compliment, then knife you in the next moment. I don't think that this is the case, and I think it's provable that this is not necessarily always the case, because we've seen a lot of leftists turn into conservatives. It's not, you very, very rarely see the reverse of that. There's a reason for that, I think. I think it's because, as we've been talking about, the left demonizes conservatives for ridiculous reasons, and what's worse is that we give them good boogeymen to point at. So if they actually got a halfway decent example of a conservative, they might have a real change of mind. And, you know, let's talk about Andrew Breitbart. He was a leftist. He changed his tune pretty rapidly and did more for the conservative movement, arguably, than, you know, anyone that I can think of in the past 10 years. And think about what he did behind the scenes. Think of the people that he talked to and he influenced. There are a bunch of leftists that he's talked with that have a much better viewpoint on conservatives for meeting him. You know, he was out there and he was a likable, nice guy. That's something completely different from what you get with a Mark Levin or from a Rush Limbaugh. When you see Rush, when you see Mark Levin, they're always screaming and shouting and yelling and, you know, generally being negative and calling people idiots and schmucks and whatever. Andrew Breitbart was good at making people like him and getting his point across. And that's something that we don't do enough of on the right. It's shocking that we haven't taken his example anywhere near to the degree that we should.
One of the things, too, that we need to keep in mind is that the leftists that we talk to are not the target. If we're having conversations in that vein, it's the people watching who are seeing a leftist and a conservative sitting side by side and seeing that the conservative is not breathing fire nor dripping fangs with blood. And that's an important part. When you have these bubble shows from the left or from the you know, where the left is broadcasting their sort of thing, and you have a lot of people in the middle, like, say, Ellen or The View or whatever, you have a lot of people in the middle who are watching that sort of thing. Seeing a conservative that's different from the way that those people portray their conservatives is huge. And those people are the audience for Make Nice Measures, not the leftists themselves. Those guys, with few exceptions, are not going to be converted. But the people in the middle that are the witnesses, those are the guys that are going to experience some cognitive dissonance, I think.
Yeah, I was just writing this, but I'll say it. You're dealing with two kinds of leftists, okay? I'm going to even set aside all the independents who might be listening to your talk. Let's just look at the leftists. There are two kinds, the reachable and the unreachable. And I don't have that discussion in front of me, you know, with the person who said, look, they're just going to turn on you. They're going to or say, yeah, okay, and then go on the offensive. To a degree, he's right. Because there are those amongst them who certainly will, and there are who won't. There are two groups in the left, the reachable and the unreachable. And when I would go, when I talk to them and say, and bond and say, look, we want the same things. Here's why. In fact, God bless you for wanting that. So many people don't care about the poor. So many people don't care about, you know, this or that or whether. That's great. And I explain why. What that does is this. The reachable, it touches. The unreachable, it exposes. And they look bad. Because then when they do exactly what this gentleman was writing and ignore and just turn on you, the audience, those who are listening and watching on, see a little piece of evil that they don't like. And the left becomes less attractive as a result. Does that make sense?
I like that, and I've used that in my own thinking, and I've tried to communicate that a couple of times to people on social media. We do the same thing when we're arguing against leftists on the internet. Slow down and think about what's your point and who's your audience. You know, it's perfectly valid to spend your time if you're just trying to sharpen your argument, and so you're doing it to develop your own argumentative skills. That's a worthwhile endeavor. But also think about the fact that the people who may be reading this, you never know who they are, and there are the persuadables out there. And make sure that what you're doing is you're presenting yourself and your position as logical and rational, and you're letting the leftist be the person who uses the ad hominem attack and is cussing at you and is fire breathing and he's crazy calling you crazy, and all you're doing is being polite in response. It's not going to change the other guy's mind. That's never your goal, because it's never going to happen. Your goal is to just, as you said, expose the leftist crazy for the leftist crazy that he is, because there may be somebody out there who sees it and understands what they're seeing is a leftist crazy and a rational righty, and, oh, well, maybe everything that I've been told, maybe I should question things. And then you've just won. You've won something. You've won something small. But, yeah, it's you're going to maybe persuade the persuadables that you don't even know are out there. They will never tell you that you persuaded them. You'll never know that you won. And you only can possibly win it by kind of engaging the leftist, but at least making sure that all your interactions with these leftists are showing you for the decent, caring human being that you are.
Well, Yeah, because, you know, we've talked so much tonight about the disadvantages we have. You know, they own the media and so forth and all these things. And there were even a few we didn't mention. Let me tell you a huge advantage you guys have. The left is addicted to hate. They can't bottle it up. They can't. It's too much of a powder keg. They can't keep a lid on it. They can't stop hating. Okay? It's the whole driving force behind why they want to get 51% to bring down the. They don't want to get it to elevate. They want to get it to bring down. That's because they hate. Okay, folks, it's easy to make them look bad. And when they do exactly what this guy was going to do, right? You know, hear you out and then immediately change topics and go on the attack. Great. They are making themselves the bad guys. And here's my simple two-word advice. Let them. See, we on the right, what we do is we let them drag us into the attack and we go, you know, throw grenade for grenade. Look, there, you can do that. There are times to do that, of course, in a debate and you're doing it and the grenades are reason. I get that, okay? And now and then you mock the left, of course. There's a place for that. But we are not taking advantage of their hate. You know, it's the old, you know, when you watch these old movies about people learning, you know, judo and all this, use their momentum against them, right?
I was just thinking of martial arts like that. I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Look, they're hateful. They can't stop hating. They won't stop hating. They must hate. Okay? Use that. Let them overcommit on it. And then you be the one who says, look, you know, look. I love these. A lot of the same things that you want. What you want them brought about through, you know, force. We do through choice, and you can get into that, and that's great. But don't underestimate how good it is to make them look that bad. It really does. That is an advantage that we have. We can not hate. They can't. They really can't.
Well, and didn't we talk about, you know, framing things in terms of, you know, the government being a bully and, you know, damaging people, government hurting people, using that victim instinct that the left is so good at and flipping that and making government the bad guy. If your liberal, you know, talk person is your bad guy, you're going to get into a personality fight. But if the government is the bad guy, and that's the one that you can obviously show there's serious damage that people are having done to them, then you sort of triangulate your way out of a one-on-one, you know, battle, and now it becomes, look, I'm trying to fight for the little guy. I think that we can't overstate that, that taking that position of we are fighting for the little guy and being able to give examples for that.
Right. I mean, when you talk about, you could say to them, hey, haven't you ever seen when everybody, somebody in a neighborhood is going through a hard time or whatever, and everybody kind of rallies, you know, these, you know, they paint their house, they cut their lawn for a while, they bring them food because they're ill or whatever. Here's the beauty of that. They're all choosing to. They're all choosing to. They're not being forced to by 51% of the voters. Taking over government and making them do it. That's why it's a beautiful thing. And when government makes them do what the 51% consider good, it's an ugly thing. Even if you're accomplishing the same end. If you know, think of it this way. Let's say somebody does something, a good deed for you, and you're like, wow, that's neat. And then you find out they only did it for the wrong reasons, because it's something they want out of you or because somebody else made them do it. How do you look at them now? Everybody knows how that feels. Everybody knows how that feels. It's not easy to make the left the bad guys. Dear Lord, it is incredible how the right has avoided making the left look as bad guys. I mean, we have turned it into an art form, not showing the bad guys as bad guys.
I think that it's something that, you know, and we talk about being effective at our messaging, it's not for lack of desire to, you know, make the left look bad. I'm 100% certain that Rush and Mark Levin and Rush, you know, all of the Glenn Beck, all of the guys, all of the talk radio show hosts, I'm sure that every single one of them want to make the left look bad and think that they are making the left look bad to an extent. But what are they making stick? It's hard when you become as polarized as you are to the general public, it's hard to bring the idea that the person that you're talking about, the person that you were trying to Alinsky, and you know, these are people who've self-Alinskied themselves to an extent, you know, talking about the leftists that need to be brought down a peg, and have you know, created these cages for themselves. They don't really do a good job. Our conservative talk radio show hosts, they don't really do a great job of making stuff stick. I'll go back again. Let's think about the last person who really had their act stick, who got Alinsky and who was successfully turned into he couldn't run. Who was the last person on the left that we successfully turned into a laughing stock? Tell me who the last person was. Fishy?
No, not even Wiener. Not even Anthony Wiener.
That was the closest that we've gotten.
Yeah.
And that's a master.
Again.
Go for it.
No, he ran again after he was, you know, disgraced, and they figured they'd had enough time to rehabilitate him. He didn't win, and that's a testament, I guess, to people's just ickiness with him. You know, the maybe people had had enough of him personally, but they don't apply the same standard to other left politicians. I mean, for Pete's sake, I can think of quite a few who've, you know, been liberally defended.
But he's the closest that we've gotten to actually, defeating a liberal and having them stay defeated, you know, in terms of winning the culture argument. I think that, you know, in the cultural arena, that's the closest we've come to defeating a leftist. And there were certain steps that, you know, were taken there, and there was a plan behind it, and it was, you know, orchestrated quite well. So, you know, I there are things that we can learn from him, and there are things that we can do better, and things that talk show radio hosts aren't doing. I mean, they are really great at calling Nancy Pelosi names. I mean, very creative. Far more creative than I could ever be with coming up, you know, with new ways to make Nancy Pelosi turn her name into fancy insults. I you know, same with Harry Reid, Sheila Jackson Lee. These guys are masters at that. Does it actually stick? Does it do anything? It doesn't seem to me. I mean, I don't know what name calling gets us. How are we actually doing something? How are we actually working on degrading the left's influence?
And I just want to introduce the concept that fighting liberals is not the same as calling them names. And being effective is not the same as stroking your own feelings. I just wanted that out there.
So I think this goes back to what Andy was saying earlier and what we've talked about already, that the left hates and the right is all about good. I don't think we can win in attacking and beating them in hate and making them hate each other. I think the way we win is we ignore it and we go about and we do good. I think we, you know, take Texas, for example, point that out. Hey, all the, you know, Barack Obama has done such a great job in creating jobs. He's created 300,000 of them. And 290,000 of those are from a Republican governor in Texas. You know, like, I mean, play it positive. Point out all the good things. Say, hey, this person's awesome and this is why. Not this person's terrible and this is why, but focus on our strengths. I think a lot of people, you'll win them over with that positivity. I think people natively and naturally go towards positive thinking and go towards a good leader, someone who will say good things about both sides, someone who will try to get people together instead of trying to tear down. I think they'll naturally go towards that. And so I think the way, it's not necessarily to fight against it, it's to present a, crap, I can't remember the word in English anymore, an opposite picture, I guess. lost the call right in. Yeah, like an opposite picture of what they're doing. I'll have to look up that word. Okay, yeah, contrast. That's a good one. Yes, thank you. Sorry.
Try to play words with friends a little more often.
Yeah, you know, it's been 10 years almost since I've spoken Finnish on a daily basis, and once in a while I'll get a few words in my head and I cannot figure them out in English.
So you had the Finnish word and couldn't figure out the English? Well, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I'm wondering if we look at, you know, what is it that makes the Kim Kardashians and Beyonce and Jay-Z's so amazingly popular and bulletproof? I mean, they can do almost anything stupid and people will love them. And it's because they are promoting themselves above all else. They aren't spending an awful lot of time focused on other people or saying other people's names. They're promoting themselves and their interests, and it's very much of a selfie-involved, look-at-me kind of culture. And if we in the conservative movement maybe try to adapt some of that, as far as that's a technique that works, you know, the whole self-promotion thing. And instead of tearing down Democrats so much, we do more of the promotion of our own successful ideas and people and personalities, and do more, not just pointing out this is a good thing, but specifically, this is a good thing because of the conservative philosophy that it demonstrates. Because we can't assume that people out there know what we're talking about or understand when we say this is something good, that they are actually making the connection that this is a good thing that was brought to you by conservative philosophy or that was brought to you by Republican elected officials. We have to be very explicit about that and make everything we do advertising and promotion for conservatism and the Republican product. And we have to get, you know, past our own reluctance to toot our own horn and promote ourselves. And I'm not talking about promoting me and myself and the refinery and the conservative union. We have to promote the conservative movement, conservative philosophy, and Republican officials who made something happen, and be very explicit about it and be very consistent and repetitive about it, to the extent that, oh my God, every single thing she posts talks about how great the frickin' Republicans are. I'm so tired of hearing it. Well, that's okay, because it works for the people who are self-promoters. That's a technique that works. It's clickbait, kind of. It's, you know, it's why do people use clickbait headlines? Because they work. Why do people self-promote all the time? Because it works.
Well, yeah, and when we do tear into them, because, you know, obviously we have to have the negative too.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jesus said, "You brood of vipers, you whitewash tombs," you know, which, you know, I say to my wife a lot.
Well, that's a weird household you've got there.
If you disagree with me, I call her brood of viper, whitewash tomb.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't do that. I don't actually do that.
He lies a lot.
I lie a lot. But
former liberal, it's in
Jesus. Name. Jesus is very disappointed that you lie a lot.
Yeah, but I do it in his name, so you know it's really, you know, there's a kind of a give and take there. Okay.
I need to leave because there's a lightning bolt headed this way. So.
here's the thing: when we do attack them, it can't be because they disagree with me, and that's the way what we've been doing. When we go after them, it has to be because they are trying to control people, not unleash them. We need to be able to show that. Okay? And, by the way, I think that, you know, that it gets harder to do, because there's one thing that this little group here has that unfortunately too much of the conservative movement doesn't. and I'm sorry, but this is just true. None of you care who wins. None of you care who carries the message. None of you needs to be the one carrying the ball over the into the end zone. None of you needs to be. Look, I go.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm serious. And I, you know, I went to I was at a meeting yesterday morning, actually, with a lot of Colorado conservative leaders. You know, and I spent about 10 minutes or 15 minutes talking to the chairman of the Colorado Republican Party. Okay, and you know, he's called a rhino by a lot of people, whatever. But what was interesting is this. There were so many people lining up, wanting to talk to him. And they just, and you could tell one by one, so many people, and there are a lot of great people there too, but some people, they just want to be the star. You can't do any of this if you want to be the star. Because if you're a conservative, you don't believe that you've succeeded until America succeeds, until others succeed. It's all about them. And I think that I think there are two things really undermining us, folks, not just the people who make stupid comments like Rush did or this article, but it's the people who have to be the one to spike the ball. They forget what matters. It's not I win, it's we win. Does that make any sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And we have way too many people who want to be dancing in the end zone and, you know, be that guy that's, as you said, spiking the football. We have a huge spiking the football problem on the right, and it always turns out bad for us. So
the right's filled with receivers, and the left is filled with offensive linemen?
Just offensive people.
Yes, it seems that way. I wanna real quick address some stuff in the chat again, because there's a really good interesting discussion going on in there. We have Titan who says that Mitt Romney was a nice guy. He behaved very, you know, he was acting the way that maybe Fishy and I want Rush to act, maybe, you know, closer to that. Try and be a little bit of a nicer guy, but he got eviscerated by the right for doing that.
He wasn't enough of a self-promoter. He didn't sell himself very well. Remember when, I guess it was at the GOP convention, and they put up that the movie of Mitt Romney, who he was, what he had done, how he had been. And it was so surprising to me and to so many people about all the amazing, wonderful stuff that Mitt Romney does, because he didn't toot his own horn. And that's why he lost. If people had known really who Mitt Romney was and what he had done, what he was capable of, what he wanted to do, what he really believed in, if he had promoted himself a little bit more, he probably could have won, because he had the right idea and he was a good guy. He was really a nice guy, but he let others define him too much, and he was too busy being a nice guy and being modest, which is very Mormon. Mormons are very modest people, and I'm sure Ryan exemplifies that as well as every other Mormon I've ever met, which makes them very good people to have around. But as far as campaigning and telling you how awesome they are because you should vote for them, they ain't the guy.
Yeah,
and
we
need a self-promoter.
But what if he, in a debate with Barack Obama, had simply said, you know, he had simply said, look, I think you want the right thing here in this issue. I think you want the right thing. But here's the problem. You want to bring it about the wrong way. And then highlighted control. That highlighted how he wants to bring about through control and how that dehumanizes people and so forth. Mitt was a great guy and a kind guy, but he didn't expose his opponent.
Right.
I agree. And I think that that's the same thing, except... sort of, it's the same kind of situation where there's an aspect that we need. We need the fight that Rush and Levin and these guys have. We need that. But I don't think that they wind up at the place that we need to be. You know, they have aspects, certain aspects that we need to have to win, but I don't think that they in and of themselves can get there. You know, I don't think that they have the total package to get us to the next level of you know, viability in the conservative movement. The next thing that that I want to talk about from the chat was don't sell conservatism. This is also from Titan. Don't sell conservatism, sell candidates as human beings instead. I think that both need to be done. I think we need to humanize conservatism and we need to humanize our candidates. And I think that we actually have some candidates that are doing a pretty good job of that, even in this Senate election cycle. That and then Steve in chat said, don't we have the blueprint? Isn't it Ronald Reagan? So I just want to throw that into the discussion and see what we all have to say about that.
And that's a lot of nothing. I suppose I'm going to get, I don't know, you've got the controls, so you can dump me out of the conversation if you need to, JD, but I'm going to say it. I'm tired of hearing about Reagan. I loved growing up in the Reagan era. I'm so fortunate to have been able to do it. And, you know, I love Ronald Reagan. I just don't think we need to keep talking about him. We need to talk about now, and we need to talk about the future. And if we want to talk about a politician who took the world that was in a bad place and made it better, we should probably model our desires after Calvin Coolidge, more so than Reagan, because Calvin really took spending and slashed the heck out of it, and he turned federal government into a much more modest kind of thing. But the era of Calvin Coolidge is over. The era of Ronald Reagan is over, and we don't need another Reagan. We need ourselves.
We need a new torchbearer too.
And right, absolutely. And I do think it's right for us to realize that guys who are on our radio personalities are not going to be leaders of the conservative movement, because they are radio personalities. It's a whole different person. It's a whole different job. It's a whole different skill set. You know, I mean, Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh are not going to lead the conservative movement and become the politicians for the ages, because that's not who they are. That's not their job. And I think they would agree with us when we say that looking to Rush Limbaugh as the leader of the conservative movement, that's wrong. He's got his role to play. And there was an article by, I believe it was Jim Garrity on National Review, talking about how we need all kinds. We need Ann Coulter and Mark Levin and Rush, and we need Krauthammer, and we need the guys from Cato, and we need Mark Stein. We need all of them. There's room for all of it, because we want the conservative movement and the libertarian movement to be so big and so vast that it needs all the different personalities and all the different brains and all of the different skill sets out there working towards our success. And we need to stop fighting for the football. Ann Coulter needs to stop fighting against Mark Levin, and Michelle Malkin needs to stop yelling at Rush or whoever is in fighting these days. I haven't paid any attention, and please don't think that I'm making up fights where there are none. I'm just grabbing names. But our people are fighting against each other all the time, and maybe that comes back to that whole spiking the football thing. Everybody's looking for the opportunity to be the star who really makes it happen, so maybe Anne is trying to make sure that she's in the number one spot when it really happens so that she gets the credit.
Well, you know, Leslie, one of the things that I've noticed is people always say, we need another Reagan, we need a hero, we need somebody to lead us out of this. And I just look at them and I'm like, why do we need that when we can all work together? Wanted us to.
You're cutting in and out there, Corey.
Mostly what? Out. You were cutting out.
Right, I'll restate it. Just going off of what you were saying, Leslie, what drives me crazy is everybody says we need another Reagan because we need somebody to come and lead us out of this crisis. We need somebody to help us, to be our savior, to be our superhero. And I just look at them and I think, no, we need to do what Reagan told us to do and all appreciate each other and work together to the best of our abilities and lead ourselves out of this mess. But instead, it's like we have this built-up memory of a wonderful person. I love Reagan to death, but... Go ahead, Andy.
One quick thing. I just want to interject. Virtually everybody who says we need a Reagan or we need Reagan back, we need another Reagan, hates Reagan's 80-20 rule.
Yes, that's what
I just wanted to
throw right. Right.
Yeah, he just summed up everything I was trying to say.
I was going there too. That was my next thing.
And okay, for everybody who's under the age of me, the 80-20 rule is somebody who is with you 80% and against you 20% is an 80% ally, not a 20% enemy. And that means that when Marco Rubio has his little 20% immigration moment, that means that we're against him on that 20%, but we still love Marco Rubio because he's a warrior for the cause.
Right, and the other thing that really gets me is that, you know, we hold so many things.
We're losing you again, Corey.
Because Andy's typing. Hold on. Is that better?
Yes.
It's always Andy's fault.
All right, we'll blame Andy. We tend to remember what we want to remember about Reagan. We don't like to remember the fact that he used to be a Democrat and he changed to becoming a Republican. We don't like to remember the fact that at one time he was pro-choice and later on in life he became pro-life. And there are other things that we hold against conservatives today.
His
immigration policy. He said that one of his biggest regrets was approving amnesty.
Mm-hmm. But he did it.
He did do it.
The last amnesty that has absolutely destroyed us. That was his fault, man.
Well, and how about the spending, the out-of-control spending that was going on during his administration?
Yeah.
Never want to remember those things. And so when we have Republicans in office or who are running for office today, for instance, Mitt Romney was pro-choice at one time and he became pro-life. Did we celebrate the fact that he became pro-life or did we constantly attack him for his pro-choice stance?
Calling him a flip-flopper. I mean, come on. He flipped in the right direction, so hooray.
He stayed. He did not flip and flop. And sorry, that's my pet peeve with that whole conversation, but if you're going to hold Reagan up on a pedestal, you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just pick and choose the facts that you want to like out of history.
Well, and this is why that's so important, because we saw this in the 2012 cycle. So often it was the hero go-round, I say that all the time, where we'd have a candidate that was the superstar, and then something would happen, and that candidate would get torched and completely, you know, burned and put out of any, you know, beyond the pale, and then they'd focus on the next one. And that one would find something, and then they would get burned to the ground. And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And it's that 20% disagreement sort of area. If we're going to get away from, and I'll do this backwards because the way that the camera goes, if we're going to start over here with the left, which is where we are now presidentially, and we have this range of candidates, my preference is obviously to be closer to this range, this end of the spectrum. But any movement this way is a positive to me. It's not perfect, but it's positive. So my theory is that we pick the level of, I suppose, agreement, the non-negotiable level, or whatever, and all of the people who are on acceptable range, that we'll go with any of them. The problem is that we make that range of acceptability so far and so narrow that anyone outside of it, we're going to see people stay home and not vote because their guy isn't the one who won. in their range of acceptability. So I hope people start thinking about that. You know, get a minimum level of compliance in your head, and that anybody who's above that or to the right of that is someone that you'll support in the end. You fight like the dickens to get your guy between the beginning of the primaries and when the candidate's decided. But after that, if that candidate is within your acceptability range, you go and you work for him.
And the other thing is, during the primaries, you fight like hell for your guy and try not to spend too much time tearing the other guy apart, because all the time you spend doing that, you are creating, you are building ammunition for the other side to use against that guy when he becomes the guy. Like what happened with the whole Dan Patrick deal here in Texas. When you have an ugly primary, the uglier the primary is, the more ammunition you're giving to the Democrats for the general. And that's just something that we have to learn and grow up, as far as, you know, being a little bit more mature politically and understanding that that goes on. I think maybe some of the Reagan worship is a recollection of, you know, a fondness for an era when it was cool to be conservative. We were proudly conservative. We were proudly American. We were victorious. We knew that we were right and that winning the Cold War was the right thing to do. And we stood up and we were proud of ourselves. We were proud to be Americans, where at least we knew we were free. And we loved our red, white, and blue. And it was awesome and it was wonderful. And we want those days back, when being conservative was cool. We want the guy who's going to stand there and be a happy warrior and be happy to be conservative, be proudly conservative, and be the leader that just says, hey, come with me to happy conservative land, and be that guy that we rally behind. And we want that. I can understand that. And I would love to have that as well. And the Democrats had that with Barack Obama. They had the image. They had the guy that they could celebrate and cheer for and rally for and follow and then be super proud of themselves because they had done this amazing thing. And isn't it awesome? And isn't America wonderful? Because look, we elected this guy. Aren't we all wonderful people? We feel good about ourselves. Well, it's natural for Republicans to want that again. I don't know in this crop of candidates that we're going to have that. I think somehow we're going to have to find that in ourselves. But we are kind of a hero worship culture, and there really isn't a hero out there for us to worship. So Reagan is the most... But Reagan is there as the recollection of, the fond recollection of, wasn't that a great time? You know, like people used to think of Camelot.
Reagan is the easy button, Mm-hmm. I really don't want to work super hard to get conservatives elected, so let's just have a perfect candidate come up and do all the hard work for us, because it's hard. It's tough. It's tough being on the campaign trail.
Here's the other thing. What are we getting when we keep coming back to, you know, Rush, Levin, bloggers, whatever, the people who have these amplified voices, which is great in rallying the conservatives? Those people don't have to implement policy. I mean, Leslie talked about that earlier, but it needs to be restated. They are not in charge of moving things, and what we're expecting is our politicians to talk like our talk show hosts and still get elected. And those hosts don't have the broad appeal that, say, an Ellen or The View does. They have a niche appeal. And that niche is not going to win the election. And the sooner we face that, the better. It's the same thing on the left, where leftists get to espouse a lot of ideas that don't cost them anything. They're not, you know, they get to say, we'd like to see that problem fixed. But they're not going to have to do it. They're just going to have to take your money to do it. And someone off in Washington will implement it. Well, the same goes for our rather amplified voices on the right that can talk about how politician ought to speak and talk about whether they're on or off message as viewed by their prism, but they don't have to implement that.
Right, and a talk show host is, or a blogger, is an, you know, an analyst and a person who discusses rather than, like you said, implementing, negotiating, coming up with an actual workable solution. And if you are someone who, as a politician with experience, has come up with workable solutions, that's going to be something that people can hate you for. That's why our mystery anonymous guy is always the hero candidate. It was Herman Cain last go around. It's Ben Carson this go around. The guy who has never actually done anything politically, so he doesn't have any mistakes that he's made. And he talks a good game, which is awesome and charming and wonderful. And we don't have anything that we can criticize him for. So all of our, he's the blank slate like Barack Obama. All of my hopes and dreams can go into this, I really want Ben Carson. And I'm using Ben Carson because Ryan mentioned him earlier, and it's the name at, you know, on the tip of my tongue here. But we have our anonymous candidates that we choose, and it's generally somebody that, you know, we'll say, he'd be a great president. And then you ask somebody, well, why? Because he made a good speech. Oh, okay.
There was that one time when Obama was really pissed off with what he said. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was great. You know, make him be president. Yeah.
I just want to sort of add on to something that Fishy said a while back. So Fishy, what you're saying is that not every conservative candidate gets to have Texas as their home state and can campaign as Ted Cruz. Like, the Ted Cruz model is not viable across the country. Is that what you're saying?
Wouldn't you think that it would be? Because we're homogenous. We are all the same. Everyone everywhere has the same views and responds the same way to the same language. Lord, deliver me.
Yes, that would be a one-size-fits-all approach to campaigning, wouldn't it? Which,
good
yeah,
one.
Yeah,
good callback.
Not something that I'm anxious to do. We are getting into the later hours or the later minutes of the show. I wanna bring something up before we go that I think sort of ties into the stuff that we've been talking about the kind of attention that we get in the media and the stuff that we say and how it reflects poorly on us sometimes. And these are the stuff that Rush said and Matt Walsh, you can debate it, whatever. There are definitely points on either side of that equation. I have something that just infuriates me that I don't think that there's anything that you can that can save this. I don't think that there's any redeemability here for this. So on Facebook one day, I came across one of my friends had posted something about legislation being cleared or that Congress has cleared the way for Barack Obama's third term or Barack Obama's forced Congress into allowing him a third term. And this is clearly not the case. This is clearly an erroneous headline. So I clicked on the link, and there was no story there. It was just the comments section. There was no story. There's no nothing. It was just the headline, which was Congress, Obama to force Congress to let him run for an illegal third term. And then there was no story, just comments. So when I saw this, I'm thinking, what is this? What is going on here that this person posted a story without reading a story, posted this thing based on the headline alone, and there's nothing backing it up. There's no nothing. So I did some further investigation, looked into this website. AmericanNews.com is the website. And through a lot of trial and error, we finally figured out that apparently it doesn't work on some versions of Firefox and Chrome, the ones that are current. It doesn't work on the current versions of Firefox and Chrome. You can't get to the story. But when I fired up Internet Explorer, I was able to see the stories along with a ton of ads. So we were talking about clickbait. This is actual clickbait. Obama to force Congress to let him run for an illegal third term. That's just one of them. Obama caught funding ISIS. Irrefutable proof offered that Obama is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. These are all articles from this site, and none of them have the stories that are in the article have nothing to do with the titles.
And they're actual articles there? Because you sent me the link, and I saw it just up from Chrome, and it was just a headline and then the Facebook comments.
Well, that's what I was trying to say, is that the site is set up such that you can see the articles on mobile, and you can see the articles on Internet Explorer and on some outdated versions of Firefox and Chrome.
Okay.
On modern browsers, there are no stories. There are only comments, and it doesn't show the ads. But when you look at it on Internet Explorer, and that was a trend, is that the people who were sharing these stories, by and large, were people who would use Internet Explorer, if you catch my drift. So there are people out there that are reading these stories and are sharing these stories, some of them just based off of the headline, for sure, and others that are being fed this erroneous information that is preying on conservatives and giving them false information. And it's absolutely infuriating, and these guys are profiting off of it because they're selling ad space, clearly. So these guys in Australia, that's where the sites are both registered to. I can't remember what the other one is. I think it's the Patriot News or something to that effect.
It's just a scum site. I mean, it's not actually...
But it's been shared. There's a Facebook page that goes with this that has close to 1 million likes. The share count is insane on these stories. So people are clicking them, and people are paying attention to these stories as if they were actual real stories. And it is, you know, it's nerve-wracking that this is occurring and that people aren't saying, hey, this stuff is bogus. These sites are not, you know, it's worse than InfoWars, because at least with InfoWars, you know, going in, oh, this is InfoWars.
Right.
These sites are, I'm sorry?
This highlights some of the hopelessness of worrying too much, well, both the hopelessness of worrying too much about loose cannons on our side and also the necessity of coming up with a better strategy countering it. And what I mean is, not only... Even if we silenced every dumb comment that comes from a conservative leader, there is plenty of stuff that is planted amongst us by the other side. Plenty of trash like that. Look, trust me, they do that. And they plant it in well-meaning, sometimes well-meaning papers, maybe like the Patriot News. I don't know it offhand. They plant things, and they plant. And even if we are perfect, they're going to plant stuff. Now, granted, that's not the same as somebody like Rush Limbaugh, I understand. But still, we need a better strategy.
Here's the point. We have a lot of people on our side who are looking for, you know, the opportunity to share news about what's going on. They are using their internet to the best of their ability to get the word out about the horrible things this administration has done, you know, attempting to show people what Obama's policies really are doing, the harmful effect. I applaud that. I think it's fabulous. Their instinct is right on. But what's happening is that they're not vetting some of the sources. And sometimes it takes a while. JD was really a while doing the research on these sites and trying to find out why they weren't showing up stories and what, you know, what the Facebook group had been posting. But we do that sort of thing. We click on a story that's from, say, a satire site and share that, and we don't check it. And then it comes back on us later, and it says, you know, it's debunked, and we look foolish. And it doesn't take too much time to inform yourself about what are satire sites are out there. Everyone practically knows The Onion by now, but there are plenty others that are trolling people on the right and getting them to spread false news and then looking like, you know, morons in the process. And I think that the larger thought here should be an encouragement to people to do a little bit of research. Don't just react and click on something and click share on something right away. Check that out, especially if it sounds hyperbolic, especially if it sounds like it's just too good or too bad to be true. Just take a couple of minutes. Check if it's a satire site. Take a couple of minutes and check to see whether the story and the headline match. If we complain about clickbait and that people do all the time, you know, BuzzFeed, etc., we should be a little bit more careful on our side. And that's something everyone can do without a huge outlay of time or anything. They're already wanting to share news. Let's just get people looking to make sure it's good sources.
Well, Fishy, do you think some of that, the reason we fall for that stuff is because basically what JD was saying earlier, we're lazy. We want a silver bullet, we don't want to go through actually winning an argument, winning a debate piece by piece. We want a silver bullet that will expose the left once and for all and win this for us. I mean, what is it? Why do we fall for this stuff?
I think we fall for that partly because in one way we're just so horrified. And in another way, some of the headlines are believable. If a little exaggerated, Obama is not going to get a third term. That is a very sore subject with me. But having, oh, this is the thing. This is how bad it is. Don't all of you people pay attention? And these people are obviously influencers in their circles, and they want to be able to bring the news to people. And news that sort of fits their worldview a little better, a little more aggressively, is hard to pass up. I get it. I get that. But again, I'd much rather have a less exaggerated source that's closer to the truth. And this people in the conservative movement who are doing the blog thing and whatever are being so meticulous about their sources because they know that if they get it wrong, the left is going to stamp on them. These guys that JD's referring to are more of a profit center than anything else. They've spent a lot of time and money building up this website, building up this Facebook group. Now imagine what would be the benefit of building up, you know, about 1 million people on Facebook that have, you know, these stories in their feed. It's not the benefit of the stories. It's not just the revenue on the
profile. They're going to sell it.
They're going to sell their list to candidates. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
We talk about getting better at social media mining and how that's how Obama's team did so well. That company is actually doing it. Those websites are actually scooping up your information, and targeted ads are headed your way by clicking like on those. So
right.
People should be aware of that. We definitely want to encourage people to get into social media, into the flow, so that conservative candidates and Republican Party, etc., can find them and connect with them. But this is done for profit.
But do so with some credibility. In looking at Alexa for this one site, they apparently just came into existence in July and are now ranked 8,549 in the United States. And that's pretty high up.
Yeah.
None of our sites are even ranked at all, the three of us. So they went from nothing
combined, we aren't there.
They went from nothing to 8549 in the space of a month, and that's through clickbait and SEO and all of those, you know, black hat techniques of getting viewership and clicks and all of that kind of stuff. It's scummy, but they're going to sell their Facebook profile to some, because those things are for sale, and it's purely profit driven. And what's very sad is seeing people on our side caught by it, and all we can do is gently comment, you realize this is a satire site, or this is bogus, this is a lie, please find a better source. Although, please find a better source, I don't ever use that. That's a phrase that just is...
You are going to get called out as a rhino the second that you... See, that's another thing, is that because people are so invested in these wish-casted stories, you know, particularly about treason or a third term for Obama or some crazy other thing that I don't know, somehow happened because of Rahm Emanuel and terrible stuff. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But people are so invested in these easy way outs or these scary, frightening horror stories that, oh God, we need to defend against this. We need to raise the alarm. We need to spread the word that this is happening. That you know, you coming in and saying,
"This not is true." So much.
There's an automatic defensive reaction to that, and it's understandable to an extent.
Yeah, don't you understand how serious the problem is, et cetera, et cetera? Yes.
I think that the correct way to combat this is what what we're trying to do here is let people know, hey, there are these ad mills out there that are out there just to get clicks and get clicks from people who are susceptible to reading these ads and stuff and or reading these headlines and saying, oh God, this must be a thing, so I need to click on it. There's a segment of the population, I know it's very hard for people to understand, but there is actually a segment of the population that thinks that if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Right.
I mean, years gone by where newspapers were reliable sources and that you couldn't publish things that were outright lies, you know, without some kickback or a pushback, I should say. That's not where we are anymore. And when you've got, you know, a lady in her 70s clicking on stuff and sharing stuff and not able to, you know, differentiate between what's real news and what's news that's designed to get your click, your name, your social security number, everything from you, it's difficult to combat that sometimes. So we need to get people to see that these are fake sites, or not even fake sites, but these are sites that I would not share with other people, that I don't think do a very good job of portraying conservatism or actual news.
I try to be really careful with some of the sites I share and stories I share, because the left likes to put those out there kind of as trolling. They make things up, and then the conservatives think it's real. They share it, and it's a way to fracture us, and it's a way to make us look like we're crazy. Mm-hmm. During the 08 primaries, Hillary Clinton is the one that came out with the whole birther thing. This birth certificate's not real. He was really born here. When she failed and he got the nomination anyway, they made it seem like that was all conservatives from the beginning. They put out a fake birth certificate at one point that was, everyone agreed, was clearly photoshopped just to troll people and to keep conservatives on that so they can say, look, they're crazy. He was really born here. They're going over the top. They don't know what they're talking about. And another thing we see, I think it was CNN a couple weeks ago, they mentioned impeachment of Obama mm-hmm. 400 or 500 times in a month, and right-leaning sites and Fox and stuff like that mentioned it a dozen, you know, a couple times. Like, it was them pushing it, saying the right's saying impeach him and trying to goad us. And
they Obama were fundraising like crazy.
Yeah, and they put those type of stories out there to make us seem like crazy when we share them and when we agree with them. And so you have to be really careful. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
And the hard thing is, you'll have people sharing the trolling articles or the satire because it sounds true, and they want it to be true or whatever. And yeah, when you do point out, this is a satire side, or this isn't true, this story's already been retracted, you will have two or three people resisting your offer of help and added credibility. But it's okay, because you'll have one or two who will also say, oh, thank you so much. I was about to share that story. I'm glad to know that that's not true. Oh my gosh, that's another one of those satire sites. I will have to look out for that. Thank you. And, you know, you'll get a couple of thank yous, and that's really all you need. It's just like when you, you know, when you share something that's kind of a thorough analysis of something that's an important point, you'll get two plus ones and half a reshare and, you know, a comment that's okay, and then there will be a stupid meme with 45 pluses, 85 reshares, and 151 comments. And you're like, man, no, nobody cares. What am I doing? Why am I bothering with this? But really, one or two people reading something in depth, that's all you need, is one or two. It's okay. She tells herself, because she's the victim.
No, because
of this all the
they
time.
Know where to go the next time they're looking for serious commentary on a serious subject. And that's where you grow your influence.
Okay, thank you. I feel better.
Yeah, really. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. You're accurate. You're promoting good information, and you're becoming a trusted source to people. That's what we want for everyone in the movement. And this sort of thing, just sort of clicking on reflex, does undermine that. And what is the deal with the flying insects in here?
I have no idea, but something that's even more annoying than that flying insect. I put the Facebook page that we were talking about. It's facebook.com/thepatriotreview is the Facebook page that's associated, as far as I can tell, with these sites. And I just want to read to you the three articles that they have there right now. Two of the four articles that they recently posted. Hanging Obama dummy causes police shutdown of U.S. city, which didn't happen. There's never shutdown of U.S. city. They shut down the city because somebody hung an Obama doll or hung an Obama dummy. No, that would be national news if that happened. You would see it on mainstream news, and this you're telling me that this happened and MSNBC didn't cover it? I mean, this would be huge. If this was an actual story, it would be huge. So there you go. Do you support, and here's their thing. Their post says, do you support what this person did? Comment yes or no. That's all that that their post is. Do you support what this person did? Yes or no. That has 160 shares. Scroll down three stories. Here we are. Breaking: KKK ride to the border to stop the invasion. Do you support them? Comment yes or no. There were 204 shares on this page.
And their main graphic is click like to impeach Barack Obama, and so they have almost a million likes. Oh my gosh.
Like,
yeah.
This is
George Soros. I mean, this is, or just somebody looking to make money. I mean,
the biggest caricature of the right that could ever be. And some of us on the right are actually clicking on this stuff and sharing it and not looking at the rest of the content on the Facebook page that's sharing this stuff. We're not looking at the rest of the stories that are on these pages, if you can even call them pages, because they're really not. I mean, this website is. I mean, it's horrible. It doesn't. It's not a functioning website in any way, shape, or form. Really, it's just there for ads and clicks. That's it.
I mean, so, wow. One of the reasons I love Pradeep's posts is because he takes a clip of the article, a paragraph, two, three, whatever his favorite part is. So I can sit and read that quick 2 to 3 paragraph instead of just the headline. If sometimes it gives me good information, sometimes if I like it, I click on it. But it's still a quick, and you know, get the wrong idea sometimes about the articles and should do better reading, but at least it gives me a little more information and entices me to click on it. not something I try to do is to, when I'm posting something that I feel like is important or a good article, a lot of the time I'll share something from it, maybe a little comment by me and then some text from the post, so people kind of get a better idea rather than just the headline.
Yes, that's always a good thing to do. It's always nice to have that additional information of an excerpted bit of the article. If you were to try to do that with the articles on these sites, the articles on these sites are two paragraphs long. They are not articles. They are not even blurbs. They're like, I don't know, supersized factoids. That's what it is. It's just, it's not, it's, I don't know what it is, but it's not journalism and it's not satire. It's
just a click crap. Mill. It's just it's just an ad mill. It's a spam site.
Guys, can I kind of bring it full circle?
Yes, please.
Robin Williams. That's where we started our talk tonight. And I think what we've been, and as we've gotten off of that and gotten into strategies and so forth and how to deal with a lot of these undermining things, I think we're dealing with the fact that we are trying to bring forth an honorable, honest, principled, foundational, reasoned message in a nation that is more swept up in the suicide of a very talented man, but in the suicide of a comic than in $17 trillion of debt being laid on our children.
Yeah, that's a good point to make, and I think that, you know, when you're talking about putting it in perspective, that's definitely one way you can do that. You could also look at his body of work and think about the way that Moscow on the Hudson was about America, you know, good and bad, the freedom here. You could look at the messages in lots of his films and appropriate that because they're conservative bits all through them. And that's sort of what I chose to do with my piece, is to focus on the beautiful, clever, wonderful things you could pull out culturally that even when the left is use all of the left ammunition at their disposal in the culture, in mass media, in pop culture, they still have to come back to conservative values.
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, another one, if I can throw one out, Dead Poets Society. Few movies have touched me more, okay, than Dead Poets Society. Absolutely. The left has to sell the right, has to act like they hold the right's values to sell best. I agree. And so doesn't that mean that maybe we shouldn't be so intimidated by the advantages that we see them having politically? We can beat them, folks. We can beat them. We will beat them if we do it right.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, because what they have to sell is it's fantasy. The whole liberal worldview is not based on reality. It's not based on real human nature. So it seems attractive, I suppose. Wouldn't it be nice if we all like unicorns and rainbows, but what we have to sell is reality and success and the most wonderful experiment in the history of mankind, which is, you know, the American way of things that created a form of government that was new in the world and that enabled millions of people to reach their potential in ways that human beings had not been able to do in the past. And we're falling back to the old oligarchical way of doing things, but we can stop ourselves and we can turn it around and bring things back to the old American founding way of doing things, because we actually have reality, human nature, normal tendencies, and the proof of everyone's daily lives on our side. And we know, everybody knows it, because we look at the things that we look at for our entertainment are the stories of the success of the conservative way of life, because the conservative way of life is the successful way of life.
And I'm going to let you in on a little secret as someone, you know, tangentially in the arts. There are not any real new stories. That what you do is you find a new way to tell the old story. And that is where we can really begin to hone our creativeness. This is not trying to reinvent the wheel. You notice that liberals don't retell they don't make new stories out of whole cloth that have values that haven't been talked about before, haven't been, built through a long history of storytelling. They're telling old stories in new ways. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that too. We have to do that.
And we can. And guess what, guys? That brings us to, I think, the conclusion of our meeting for today. Am I right? Anybody have some closing statements here? Closing points of view?
I have nothing intelligent to say.
No, I think we pretty much did it. Again, it was great having Andy back. It was great having Corey back last week. It's great having the full Party of Choice team. Actually, not the full Party of Choice team. We still are missing a single member from what I've heard.
That's right.
We're going to have to try to get her in.
We got a new girl. There's a new girl that we can, what's the word that fraternities use? Hazing. We got hazing.
Yes, there we go.
We'll have to do the toilet swirlies via Hangout, but we could try and see if the technology works.
She's going to come in and go, there's a new surface in town.
Serious.
Aha, I see what you did there. thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody who came and hung out in the chat. I really appreciate that. Everybody really appreciates that. That's really cool that we can have that additional conversation and try and get more voices into this. And I'm really, really happy with what we've done this week.
Like, plus, share, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Make sure you do it. All of the sites are on the side where you're seeing everything. I think it's going to be over there.
At conservativeunion.net/refinery, you can see the links to the Party of Choice, Free Radical Network. You'll be at the Conservative Union. There's the subscribe to the YouTube channels. All the Refinery stuff goes on the Conservative Union YouTube channel. So if you're looking for the Refinery YouTube channel, there ain't one. We like to confuse you. This is only for smart people.
And Free Radical Network is back fully back up. All of our posts restored.
Yay!
Thank you,
Brass.
That is so awesome. And that's going to finish us off for this week, and we will see everybody Tuesday, 8:30 Central at conservativeunion.net/refinery. Same bat time, same bat channel. Bye, everybody.